Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cameras roll.
Right now, stop.
During a desperate struggle to survive.
This is my last recording.
Life hangs in the balance.
Oh!
Trapped all alone in the remote Himalayas.
My right arm can't move. I have 6 broken ribs on both sides. I'm running out of energy. I'm running out of strength.
Struggling to breathe in a whitewater wipeout.
The water's pushing into the helmet. It's choking me. I cannot physically do another rapid. I'm thinking I'm drowning at this point.
And bracing for impact in a skydiving horror fall.
Once I open the parachute, I'm spinning out of control. The ground's rushing up to me. I know the end is coming, and it's coming very soon.
Good. Bye.
Without the footage to prove it,
no
one would believe
come ahead.
These people are still alive. Everest Base Camp, 16,000 feet above sea level. The staging point for the greatest feat in mountaineering.
With Everest, you look way up. And the scale of it is incredible, but it also is beautiful because that feeling of it dominating the Earth, I mean, it's just so much bigger than anything else around it.
To reach this summit, you have to be willing to pay the ultimate price.
Well, anytime you're climbing, it's going to be dangerous. That's part of the appeal for a lot of people. And no matter how good you think you're prepared, you can always have an accident happen.
But scientist Dr. John Aull isn't climbing Everest for the thrill. He's after snow samples from the highest place on Earth.
I study the impact of climate change on how it affects plants and habitat for animals, and then in turn how those changes are going to affect humans.
Early one morning, John Aull's advanced Sherpa team begins their climb up the mountain while he waits below at base camp.
It's probably 8 o'clock in the morning and I hear this crack.
Copter is 30 minutes out to land in base camp.
And then we begin getting radio calls back. The fact that a lot of people have been hit by the avalanche.
16 Sherpas are killed in the devastating avalanche. including one of John All's guides.
And so for the rest of the afternoon, there's a parade of helicopters slowly lowering down, and they have bodies hanging at the end of 100-foot lines.
The mountain is immediately closed for the rest of the season, but John All's climate change research must go on. 2 weeks later, he's camped at 20,000 feet on nearby Mount Himlong. The rest of his team is yet to arrive.
You don't ever want to be on the mountain alone, but in an established camp, just collecting snow samples, it seems like not a great choice. But given the fact we only have a few days left, I mean, that few days could make the difference between getting data and not getting data. And so I wake up and I'm feeling hungry and thirsty. So I'm going to run out and grab some snow samples, science samples, as well as a big trash bag of snow to make coffee and breakfast and everything else. I'm just going out for 15 minutes, so I don't have a sat phone, I don't have a headlamp, I don't have anything. It's just a little stroll. I take photos of the tent before I leave. As I move up, I take photos.
After a 10-minute hike up the mountain, John takes one last photo.
Looks like the perfect sampling location. I begin walking forward, and bright sunlight becomes black. As it goes from bright sunlight to dark, it combined with the vertigo. There's only one thing that can possibly mean, that I'm falling into a crevasse.
70 feet down, John slams into a ledge of ice.
I'm alive. I'm drawing breath. This is incredible.
He switches his camera into video mode.
Well, I'm pretty well. I fell through that hole. Thankfully, I didn't keep falling that way. I got trapped here instead. On this ledge, my arm I can't use.
His shoulder's dislocated. 16 bones are broken. The only thing keeping him from falling to his death, an ice shelf a few feet wide.
If that shelf hadn't been there, I would not have stopped. It was a huge crevasse, hundreds of feet deep, and that never would have found my body.
Oh, I can't go that way at all. Thank God I stopped at this ledge.
I'm still thinking what I'm going to do, so I just start talking to the camera.
How the f*** we get back up there, though?
I want to document it primarily for my mom and my friends, and not these are my last words type thing. I don't ever think that way. I never would have gotten out of there if I was thinking that way. Instead, it was, I want you to see where I'm at and understand when I try and explain this to you.
John All knows there's no chance of rescue. If he can't crawl out, this Himalayan crevasse will be his final resting place.
It's like being in a meat locker. You're deep in an ice pit.
My right arm is seizing up. I can't use it anymore.
Feet up, hurtling toward Earth at 120 miles an hour, a skydiver's parachute fails.
Time is going by very fast, and the ground is coming up to get you.
With only seconds until impact, he's out of options.
I know that what I've got is not a good situation at all, and I will more than likely die.
Bye!
In 23 years of professional skydiving, Jonathan King has jumped out of a plane over 20,000 times.
I always dreamt of flying when I was a kid. I think that's the closest you can get to that kind of freedom.
You'll never forget your first skydive. And for those that want their jump on film, Jonathan is the guy who gets that perfect shot.
you can't see it unless you're up there. So the camera kind of gives people a little kind of window into what we do. And without it, you know, people would never really get to see it.
One day, filming first-time jumpers in New Zealand, Jonathan's helmet-mounted camera captures something he's never seen before.
I witness my tandem pair open their parachute, and I continue in freefall for another 10 seconds. Open my parachute, it's fine. I turn around, I can see that there's a parachute spinning, and it's Michael.
Jonathan's good friend Michael Holmes' parachute won't open, and the ground is fast approaching.
You normally look up and you can see it starting to inflate. But at this point, once I open the parachute, I'm actually at a strange angle and spinning out of control. I don't actually know what's gone wrong. I just know that something has gone wrong.
As Michael's helmet-mounted camera records his free fall, he desperately tries to free his parachute.
It's like somebody's grabbed me by my belt and spun me around.
I just realized that what was going on wasn't good. Time is of the essence, really, when it comes to problems in free fall. The sooner you can get problems dealt with, the more time you have.
Michael plummets towards Earth at around 100 miles an hour. Sure death is just seconds away.
Time is going by very fast, and the ground is coming up to get you.
I know the end is coming, and it's coming very soon.
Coming up, a rafting trip takes a terrible turn.
Just praying for the next opportunity to breathe. One blow to the head, I'll be unconscious and I'll be gone.
And trapped in a crevasse with a broken back, shoulder, arm, and ribs, a scientist has to climb for his life.
My right arm is seizing up. I can't use it anymore.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
As roaring rapids run through a narrow canyon.
Go, go, go! It's terrifying. I can't believe how quickly it's moving.
A fun day of whitewater rafting
suddenly turns into a nightmare.
I'm holding myself into a little fetal position and just praying for the next opportunity to breathe.
...22-year-old Michelle Phelps is no stranger to the water. She's a swim instructor, lifeguard, surfer, and a scuba instructor.
I've always felt very comfortable in the water, very safe. Water's never scared me.
A whitewater rafting trip in Colorado's Royal Gorge is just another water adventure for Michelle. Until she gets her first look at the raging river.
I'm looking at the water and I'm thinking, it's terrifying. I can't believe how quickly it's moving. I keep looking at it thinking, oh my gosh.
Michelle is about to raft one of the deadliest rivers in America. In 2014 alone, 8 people died on the Colorado stretch of the Arkansas River. As the trip begins, Michelle presses record on her chest-mounted camera.
The guide tells us the next part that's coming up, they're back to back. It's boom, 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 all in a row. The water is just way more intense here. Water's higher, stronger. But we're starting to kind of realize, like, okay, this is game time. So we're going through and we hit this big wave.
Go, go, go!
We kind of recover, kind of wipe the water off of our face. And we look up and we see the second big wave. Just kind of think, I have no idea how we're going to make it past this one because it was huge. They tell you in the safety briefing, it's going to be cold, it's going to take your breath away. But even knowing that, you're still not quite prepared for how cold it is.
Despite the frigid 50-degree water, Michelle puts on a brave face.
I'm laughing at this point, but it's not a real laugh. It's a nervous laugh. I have no idea at this point that it's going to be a lot longer swim than a couple seconds. The water starts to just pull me underwater and it just shakes me. It was just shaking me like a rag doll. Then after a minute or two, I don't see anybody. It's just me. The water's pushing into the helmet. It's creating, you know, parachute effect and choking me. And any time there was a second or two to take a breath, it was half water, half air.
Michelle enters a notorious section of the river known as the Narrows. The water picks up speed, and with steep walls on either side of her, there's no way out but down over more rapids.
Anytime the camera is underwater, my head is underwater. I'm pretty terrified at this point. I keep popping up, and I notice that every time I pop up, I'm getting closer and closer to the big rock wall on my right. One blow to the head, I'll be unconscious, and I'll be a goner.
Michelle's pulled under. 5 seconds go by. Then 10. She still doesn't emerge.
I'm holding myself into a little fetal position and just praying for the next opportunity to breathe. I feel a big blow of pain. I'm gonna be that person on the news tonight.
...5,000 feet above New Zealand's Lake Taupo, skydiver Michael Holmes is plummeting to Earth in a death spiral.
I'm seeing ground, lake, sky, ground, lake, sky, ground, lake, sky, just going round and around.
Michael's main parachute is hopelessly tangled.
Even if it's open and spinning out of control, it will be eating up a lot of altitude quite fast.
A veteran of over 15,000 jumps, Michael does everything he can to stay calm.
I want to deal with this problem as soon as possible, within 30 seconds.
Above him, good friend Jonathan King films as the disaster unfolds.
He's roughly 1,000 feet from me. So I pretty quickly start diving my parachute down towards him. But as soon as I got near him, I realized that it doesn't look good. He looks like a rag doll.
There's only one way Michael can stop this spiraling fall. Pull an emergency handle that will cut the tangled parachute off of his back.
So I pull the cutaway handle to get rid of it. But the parachute remains. And then I just stayed spinning. All of a sudden, from that point, I realized that this wasn't just another malfunction.
Michael's crippled main chute is stuck on his back. It's slowing him slightly, but not enough to save his life. Michael is rapidly running out of options.
At this point, it's slowing things down and quick thinking and clever thinking about what to do next.
Launching his reserve chute could either guarantee survival.
It's either gonna open, happy days, fly, land as normal.
Or it could tangle in the main chute and make him drop even faster.
You know, I'm dead anyway, so why not try all my options?
Just feet from the ground, Michael decides to deploy his reserve chute.
It's just got entangled with what I've already got, so it hasn't made the situation better. If anything, it's made it worse. I know that that was my last option, and I just come to terms with the fact of you've done everything you can, and you are going to hit the ground and die.
With just seconds to impact, Michael stares death in the face.
I've got the ground rushing up to me at this point. And it's all happening too quick. Too quick, too soon at the end.
Good. Bye.
In the remote Himalayan mountains of Nepal, Dr. John All is trapped 70 feet down a crevasse. It's freezing. The air is dangerously thin, and no one knows he's here. Oh. He hopes that someday, someone sees the footage.
Oh, I'm pretty well f***ed. I fell through that hole. Thankfully, I didn't keep falling that way. I got trapped here instead. This ledge, my arm I can't use.
His right shoulder is dislocated. His right arm, collarbone, and shoulder blade are broken.
My right arm can't move. I can't really lean against it. And breathing is incredibly difficult. I have 6 broken ribs on both sides. And so I'm breathing as hard as I can, and every one is like someone stabbing me in various locations while I'm trying to breathe. I can feel my chest cavity filling with blood. And so that's another reason I have to keep moving.
I'm gonna try and stem above that, get through that, try and head that way. Hopefully I can escape. It doesn't look easy, but that's all I can do. I don't have a right arm.
At 20,000 feet, just breathing is a struggle. There's less oxygen in the air, and blood carries less oxygen. After 3 hours, John All has clawed his way up, only 30 feet.
Oh. It literally becomes an hour for 10 feet. Oh. And the reason is because I'm going 100 feet or more sideways and moving slowly and breathing like I'm about to pass out.
Oh. So I can't get out this way. It's too soft. I can't talk because I have a broken rib, I think. or my chest is filling with blood or something.
John is bleeding internally, slurring his words, and beginning to lose his will to survive.
Oh, hurt bad. But I gotta get out.
I'm running out of energy. I'm running out of strength. I start looking down, thinking, God, it would be so easy just to fall, and I don't want that to happen. And my subconscious or whatever kicks a thought about my mom and how she would feel. And so I knew I couldn't do that to her.
I just gotta go a little further. I can do it.
And so that little quick flash of emotion is brief, but it's enough to kick me across.
I'm so close. It's been so easy. If I don't work in your right arm. Oh, climbed all the way. Over, up, over. So close.
I'm 15 feet below, 10 feet below, and it's been hours and hours and hours. At this point, I have no energy left at all. In the last few feet, I'm utterly spent of everything possible. I sort of mentally slap myself and say, you've climbed all this way. You're going to get out of this right now. And so I have a last surge. I'm finally out. Everyone always wants to hear, oh, it was triumph and so forth, but I'm a long way from the tent, so I'm a really long way from any sort of hospital. And I begin moving downhill. I can see the tent. It's just this little dot down there. And it takes a couple hours to crawl back to it.
Dr. All is finally safe inside his tent, but he can barely move. He manages to log a distress call on his satellite phone.
It's the worst of my life. I mean, it's utter agony. No sleep, no ability to stop thinking about anything other than the agony. It takes 19 hours, essentially fairly late the next day, until I finally get the helicopter.
When John All finally makes it back to the United States, the doctors are in shock. He has 6 broken ribs and 6 broken vertebra. His collarbone, shoulder blade, and arm are also broken. His right shoulder, badly dislocated. It's nothing short of a miracle that he was able to climb 70 feet.
The way I've always described it is Tom Sawyer when he walks in on his own funeral. I mean, that's what it feels like. I died, and I had to fight for hours to not die. It's just, I think certain personality types are hard-headed, and I was hard-headed and didn't want to stay down there, so I climbed out.
In the name of science, John All has vowed to continue his dangerous work.
We're trying to do what we do because we think it'll help science and it'll help conservation, and so that's why we're out there taking more risks than maybe the average person would. But as long as it has some meaning, I think it makes it more worthwhile.
Swim instructor Michelle Phelps films her own desperate battle for survival in one of the deadliest rivers in the United States.
My biggest concern at this point was the rocks and one blow to the head and being knocked unconscious. I'm thinking this, you know, I can't end like this. Can't end like this. I kick the wall and I feel a big blow of pain.
Michelle fractures her foot on the canyon's rock wall, but she refuses to give up.
My adrenaline's pumping, and I keep going with it. I just keep kicking and kicking and kicking. I see nobody around me. I feel like I'm completely by myself.
She's now been in the 50-degree water for 5 minutes. Hypothermia is threatening. She's running out of energy, and it's a battle to keep her head above water.
I'm thinking I'm drowning at this point. I'm feeling way beyond exhausted. I'm tired. I'm freezing. And I look up, and that's when I see another class 4 rapid coming. I cannot do this rapid. Even if mentally I had something else to give, more fight, my body's done. I cannot physically do another rapid. If I don't get myself out now, I'm going to be that person on the news tonight. So I start swimming as hard as I can to the side, to the left side where the shore is. And I'm almost swimming upstream, just anything I can do to stay away from this rapid. My arms feel like they're jello with weights strapped to them, but I'm moving them. And I grab on to this rock and I hold on for dear life. Looking at the water, I couldn't believe how quickly it was moving, and I couldn't believe that I was just in the water. And I came out of that.
Michelle stumbles up the bank and finds the rest of her group. Michelle hasn't ruled out going rafting again, but she's learned a valuable lesson.
I should have swam to the side immediately when I fell in the water. Now, whenever I go rafting again, if and when I fall in, I'm getting my butt to shore as soon as possible.
In New Zealand, professional skydiver Michael Holmes' parachute is tangled. His reserve chute is also tangled, and he's seconds from impact at 100 miles an hour.
I've decided that I'm going to die with the minimal parachute that I've got. I've got absolutely no control. I always thought it was going to hit the water. I knew that was going to be bad because I'd hit the water, I'd be knocked out from that, and then I'd drown.
Jonathan King, Michael's good friend, is watching and filming from above. If Michael somehow survives his fall into the water, Jonathan may be able to keep him from drowning.
Once it's getting quite low to the ground, I'm quite focused on my approach to landing right with him.
In the final few seconds, Michael drifts back over the land. He's certain that this is the end.
Everything's happening too fast now. The ground's rushing up to me. I haven't got my life flashing before my eyes. I know the end is coming, and it's coming very soon. And at that point, I knew, well, I'm definitely dead now. And I had this strange moment where I thought, oh, I've got a camera on my head. I should say something. And then quickly, just before I hit the ground, you just hear sort of my last word was just a quick bye.
Good. Bye.
And then seconds later, just hit the ground. I'm just seeing spinning, and then black. There's no pain. It's just I'm awake. I'm not.
So as I see him impact with the earth, I realize that, you know, this is not good. And I can actually hear it and almost feel the thud when he impacts. My game plan is to land as close as possible.
To get to his friend as quickly as possible, Jonathan King puts his own life on the line and lands much faster than normal.
So I pretty much just prepare myself for a hard landing and ditch into the bush.
The impact site is a dense patch of blackberry bushes.
So as soon as I lay my hands on this blackberry bush, I know that this is going to be tough. Everywhere you grab, it's sharp, and there's needles sticking into your hands. something takes over and you push that kind of pain aside and just go for it. I know that Michael's just to my right, a couple of metres away, and I have to get to him, so I call out to him.
JK, bro!
For Michael to have any chance of survival, Jonathan has to get to him immediately.
It's very quiet, and I can't hear a thing. I can't hear him breathing. I can't hear him calling out or groaning in pain. I hear nothing. And I'm literally 2 meters away from him.
Okay.
So when I call out to him and don't hear a response, my immediate thought that he's dead.
Okay.
The big question surrounding Michael Holmes' horrific parachute accident. Why didn't his chute open properly?
All I'm thinking of is the problem itself, how it happened, why it happened, and was it my fault?
It turned out to be a one-in-a-million stroke of bad luck. By pure chance, some lines tangled in the mechanism that releases the parachute from its container on the skydiver's back. No one is exactly sure why. But it wasn't human error. Michael did everything by the book to save himself all the way to the ground.
He kept a cool head, you know, in a high-pressure situation. He did some pretty amazing things. And he had the thought to, you know, even say goodbye before he did it.
Good. Bye.
To find out if Michael is still alive, Jonathan crash lands as close to his friend as possible.
I'm stuck in the bush. I release my parachute. I peel myself away from the sticky branches and orientate myself.
Okay!
I immediately call out to him.
Okay! JK, bro!
Then quiet. Waiting for a response, but there's nothing. So rip my way through these bushes for another 10, 15 seconds, call out again.
Okay.
And hear nothing. I thought that he was dead.
Jonathan finally reaches Michael's parachute.
I still can't see Michael. There's some very large branches in front of me, so I kind of pull them down and I can peer over and I can see him probably about 7 feet down below me, unresponsive.
You talk to me, bro?
Michael's helmet-mounted camera is still rolling.
Okay!
He's been unconscious for 2 minutes.
You talk to me, bro?
The next thing I remember is hearing a voice.
JK, bro!
I'm not sure who it is at this moment. And then I keep passing out again. And then I wake up, I hear a voice.
Speak to me, bro!
Eventually, I see my friend Jonathan over me.
Don't move, man. Take it easy.
Talking to me, asking me if I'm okay.
Thanks, old man. Yes.
That was a dream.
I'm in a fair amount of pain, not unbearable.
Right. How's that arm?
Yeah, that's good.
I'm alive, I can feel my hands and feet, but if I move, it could put me in a wheelchair for the rest of my life, or it could even kill me.
Just stay still, bro. Helps on its way, right?
Michael keeps asking me questions regarding what went wrong.
What happened? What's happened? You landed in a good place.
He's repeating his questions.
What happened?
Which is a sure sign of concussion or a head injury. So my immediate concerns are he could have some significant injury to his spine or his neck.
Stay still. Please.
No detachable. No detachable.
That's your reserve bridle, bro. Wrapped up in your slider.
So it wasn't a dream.
Within 30 minutes, rescue teams arrive. It soon becomes clear Michael Holmes has miraculously survived.
So after all of that, after hitting the ground at such a speed and such an impact, all I really ended up was a shattered left ankle and a collapsed and punctured lung and some broken ribs.
If Michael had hit the water or hard ground, he would have died. With seconds to spare, getting blown over land and into a thick cushion of blackberry bushes saved his life.
Looking back on it and seeing the footage and remembering how I felt,
I know I'm definitely below 1,000 feet.
I can't believe I'm alive from that. Like, I said goodbye because I thought it was goodbye. I knew the situation I was in. I shouldn't have come out, yet here I am.
For Jonathan King, witnessing Michael's horrific accident has had a lasting effect.
There is a fine line between survival and death, I suppose. I still skydive, not as frequent as I used to. You know, the accident has changed the way I look at things. I've got kids now, and you know, you definitely look at life a lot differently and appreciate what you've got.
But remaining earthbound isn't an option for Michael Holmes.
It never entered my mind that I wouldn't skydive again.
8 months after that fateful day, Michael makes his first jump.
I think about the accident on a daily basis, and I think it's a good reminder to go over my emergency drills and to be prepared for anything. It's a very safe sport. I trust myself, I trust my equipment, but, you know, end of the day, anything can happen.
Oh, beautiful, mate.
There you go.
What's up?
I think I've had my one in a million. I think I've had my dice with death. I think I'm pretty safe now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.